On this episode of The James Quandall Show.
I'm going 100% all in. You don't have to. I just want to do this for our relationship. But doing it, leading with action, and then seeing where that takes your relationship. Because I think if you pour 100% of love, commitment, communication, those things in, ultimately it'll come back and it's just going to build a better relationship in the long term.
Brad Mulvey is a husband, dad, entrepreneur, marketing consultant, podcast host, and personal development junkie. As host of the World Class Dads podcast, he explores fatherhood with the world's top performers to learn how they integrate being amazing dads with their pursuit of world-class achievement. Brad is also the co-founder of Guestbox Love, an innovative service that allows podcast hosts to automate sending thank you gifts to guests of their shows. We were just talking before we were recording about creating a flexible lifestyle. So I do want to talk about that because I think that that goes in to the topic of today's show, which is parenting and being a dad and raising a family. And how did you create the life that you're in right now?
Ooh, yeah, that's a big question. But I think that a lot of it for me has just been being intentional. And well, I guess before I even get into it, James, thanks for inviting me on the show, dude. I've been listening to your episodes and I've been loving it. So I just listened to the Chess Master and that episode's awesome. Dude, you've got a great vibe with your show. So
well, I appreciate that. I think that we're just trying to just do what you do, which is just talk. Like, I mean, I write down some ideas of maybe where I want the conversation to go, but so far in the interviews I've done, I just threw the script away basically, and it's just like, oh, well, that sounds interesting. Let's just talk about that for an hour.
Dude, that's the best way to do it, because then you get such a more authentic conversation too. So yeah, and I think for me it's been a lot of just trying to be intentional where I wanted my career and my life to go. And a lot of that just came from failure in that area. So I was the guy who, coming out of college, had a corporate job at a company owned by News Corp, Rupert Murdoch, like as corporate.
So most college kids' dream job is what you're saying.
And that's, I thought it was, like, I was living in Chicago. I was a lot of nights leaving the office in downtown Chicago, you know, and it was dark out and I'm in the city and I'm like, this is cool. I'm doing it. Like, I am successful. I'm working, you know, these long hours and just kicking butt. And this is success. I'm here. And it fortunately didn't take me very long to realize that's not the way I wanted to live my life and that I wasn't getting fulfillment in that. And the environment I was in, it was a sales role and it was cutthroat and you're competing with the guy sitting next to you. I had a manager who literally sat in the cubicle next to me and would stand up and look over my shoulder at what was on my computer screen, like literally looking over.
Wow. It sounds like he needed some more tasks to be doing himself.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just kind of one of those things where, you know, fortunately I came to the realization that that's not the way I wanted to live my life. And I'd met my wife, you know, as all good stories go, I'd met my wife during that time frame, and we ended up deciding to move back to Cleveland, Ohio area where we're both from. That pushed me into a new role on a different trajectory of more stagnation instead of, so it was kind of, then I was, instead of just burnt in kind of burnout mode, I was in kind of boredom mode and didn't see my career going where I wanted to. And that's where I was fortunate enough to have a hour commute each direction and discovered the wonderful world of podcasts. And it just opened my eyes to, like, in my mind, education was done. Like, I was out of college, you know, that was it for me. I wasn't planning on going back for any continued education. And it just opened my whole world up to entrepreneurial podcasts and personal development, and just started hearing authors who I found interesting and reading their books. And it just kind of opened up this whole window into part of the universe mm-hmm. that I didn't know existed. To get back to your question, is like, okay, I need to be intentional of where I want my life to go. I can't just hope that I'm doing the right thing and grind and grind and grind, and then look up in 30 years, hope that I arrived where I wanted to. That led to a lot of different decisions around starting a podcast, getting more involved, you know, with, you know, trying to meet the right people and building an, you could call it networking, but really just a group of friends and people that I really admire, and finding mentors. A lot of that I don't even look at as kind of formal, you know, networking. It's just more of surrounding yourself by the right people, and, you know, led me to meet fascinating people like you. And it's kind of changed my mindset on a lot of things, mm-hmm. and my trajectory, and led to me just making decisions with my career and where I invest my time, hopefully put me in a position to be able to do the things that I love and create that lifestyle that I truly am passionate about.
So how important is it then, now that you kind of have this bigger picture, for you to actually get fulfillment from like the physical job?
When you talk about a job, number one, and I don't know that job is the right word, and hopefully my wife doesn't hear it.
Well, but I hope she listens. I'm going to send this to her.
So. Yeah. Yeah, no, she won't listen. I don't think she's listened to any of my podcasts.
Really? Done, see, my wife, we just get in the car. I'm like, hey, we're going to listen to my show with Rabbi Lappin today. I want to like listen to it again. Will you listen to it? Nope. You okay? And I just hit play.
Yeah. After, because do you edit yours or do you?
I have a friend, James, that does the editing, because I don't think I could listen to myself more than one time.
That's how it is with me. I've always done my own editing. And after that, I'm like, okay, I got it. Like, I'll go back to some that I really just want to hear what the guest said again, but I got to fast forward through the intro because just listening to myself talk too much.
Yeah. So we know you got the podcast job, and then, so you do have, you know, being a husband and a father. I mean, those are, what else you have going on?
And then I'm in also kind of a sales role for an entrepreneurial marketing organization called Speedy on Data as well.
And then you've got your own entrepreneurial kind of projects you're doing too.
Yeah. And then kind of working on launching a new company called Guestbox Love, which is a company that automates the process for podcasters to send thank you gifts to their guests.
Which is just such a cool idea. But like, so when you're in Chicago, you're working for the News Corp. That's, you know, you watch the movies with Leonardo DiCaprio and he's, you know, a shark. And like, that's the dream. Like I'm doing it. I've got the nice car, the nice watch, the nice apartment. But I'm at work all the time. So I'm never actually in my apartment. I might even sleep in my office. Now you've got more jobs than just one. Like you're probably busier. Are you like, do you think you're busier now than you were then?
Oh, for sure. And a lot of that too is the family side of it. Cause you know, you think back to those days, your obligations outside of work, at least in my case, were pretty limited. I was kind of in the work hard, play hard stage of life. So once I was out of the office, then I was, you know, unplugged and could use my time as I saw fit. I was young and single. So it was a fun time of life, you know, for sure, living in the city and going out and doing all that. And I should definitely specify that I definitely didn't have the nice car or watch that time.
Oh, man. So you were,
I was still operating on a budget. But yeah, no, it was. But then once kids, you know, as you know, once you get married, you want, at least for me, I want to be there for my wife and I want to spend time with her and have quality time. That's one of my love languages, is quality time. And so that's, I wouldn't even call it an obligation, but it's definitely a huge portion of my calendar was spending time with her. And then once I became a dad, that's even a whole nother chapter, another giant chunk of my time that, A, the obligations of getting up early, of changing diapers, but then also the stuff I want to do, the playing, the being there for her, reading, teaching her things, showing her some of my favorite movies. Turns out I still love Disney movies, which is awesome just to like see her.
Does she have a favorite already?
I feel like when I throw Disney movies on, it's more for me. Like 10 minutes go by, she's like, all right, let's go do something else. And I'm like, but wait.
Yeah, he's about to go under the bed or whatever. So yeah, like quality time is also my number one love language. And gratefully, I have a good harmony with my wife. That's her number one as well. So I would consider you very successful and busy working on a whole bunch of different things. How do you still get quality time and do all of that?
I would use that word intentional again. It's gotten harder. So like I'm in a chapter right now where this summer we like, it's just been so much fun. So my daughter is a year and a half, and just seeing her just kind of discover the world. Like last summer was fun, but you know, it's pandemic and we spent a lot of quality time together, but she was just rolling around on the floor. But now she's running around. We're going to parks, we're going on hikes. And so I have to get super purposeful in terms of how I schedule my calendar. And so part of that was I have the World Class Dads podcast, which I made the decision to take a summer hiatus from that. And part of that was just like, okay, days are longer right now. My daughter's not in school yet. I want to have this time to just be with her and watch her discover these things. And so that's something had to give. And I'm also investing more time into the guest box love concept and exploring that and trying to get that off the ground. And so there's a balancing act where a couple of years ago, I might have tried to do a few of these things at once. I realized my ability to really put the effort into these different areas of life, sometimes something needs to give. And I've drawn a pretty hard line in the sand, at least for this chapter of, I don't want that to be Sunday with my daughter. I could make that decision for my wife to take her for the day or send her to the in-laws and then just kind of go heads down in the office for 9-10 hours, but that's not my priority at this moment. So it's just making those decisions.
So many of my friends and myself included, it's hard to get that priority right. You know, it's like work, health, maybe, and then family. Like, how do you get the order right? Like, how did you do that specifically?
Well, I trial and error. So times where my health was not the priority, because I would say mine is at this stage, I put health really at the top, because when my health's in line, everything else trickles down to be better. It trickles down to for everything else being better. That's another area you mentioned, having alignment with your wife, that fortunately we're both very aligned on, that where we make it a priority to give each other, even on crazy days, to give each other time to dedicate to ourselves. And for both of us, that usually works out to some sort of health activity, whether it's jumping on the Peloton or getting a workout in the basement, whatever it is. It's just been a lot of times of my life being out of balance and out of whack and not prioritizing the right things, where it all kind of falls apart, to at a certain point just realizing I need to sit down and really figure out what are those my core values and what are those priorities in those different areas of life.
Did you write them down? Like, do you have them written out?
I do. So it's family, or sorry, it's health, it's family, you know, spirituality, and then the work and professional stuff is probably on number four in that lineup. Mm-hmm. Kind of relationships outside of that, underneath that, but it's something that those fluctuate, and where, like, I always strive for balance and I always looked for that perfect work-life balance, but realize that that doesn't exist. And at different seasons of life, I have to make sure that things are running appropriately, because if I do neglect the job area that is the majority of the income, then that has a pretty negative impact on the family side and on everything else. And so there is a level of balance, but it's just been for me a constant effort of trying to figure out what it is that at this season of life needs my fullest attention.
Yeah. Did you have like your childhood, what did that look like as far as parenting and the priorities that they made?
That's a good question. That probably puts a lot into it, but a lot of the priority was around kind of time with the family, having, you know, really great family experiences. And I was very fortunate in that regard. I'd say I had a very charmed childhood, would be a word that I'd use to describe it. Interesting. My journey then kind of was maybe abnormal, that later in life, kind of closer to the time where I was getting into the business world, things kind of fell apart on the financial side for my parents. And a lot of it actually probably started many years earlier with decisions that were made that, you know, weren't in line with their financial situation at the time, but were more of trying to do the things that, I don't know if you want to call it keeping up with the Joneses, or just trying to make decisions that made it appear that we were in a better financial position than necessarily we were. And a lot of that was withheld from everybody outside of my father for a long time, until it came to a critical point where it all fell apart. And so that's impacted a lot of the way that I structure my life as well. You know, I think it ingrained a deep value of family, but then also that financial security is kind of always in the forefront of my mind too, because I've seen what can happen when that goes away, or when the rug's pulled out from you on that front. So
how old were you when that kind of happened?
Probably about 22 is okay. Like right as I was coming out of college, like senior year coming out of college.
So you were out of the home?
Yes. Yeah.
And did you have any siblings that were still living at home at that point?
My younger brother was just starting college at that time. So he's 5 years younger. So kind of his senior year, he was still at home, but kind of flying the coop there shortly after.
It's kind of that, this mentality that in the financial circles, they say this a lot, like pay yourself first.
Right.
And so like, go do the family vacation and figure out how to like pay for it later, instead of like saving and saving and saving and then not doing those things and then never doing those things. Because they're like, well, if you have like a mindset of abundance, then if you spend the money, you'll find a way to go make it. Unfortunately, my friend Dave Ramsey would speak otherwise, that you should be, that doesn't always work out that way.
Right.
And, you know, I like the word charmed childhood, because it sounds like with the quality time that you and your wife are spending together and the focus that you're putting on your health first and family, that you're creating that type of an environment as well for your child. And then you learned about sort of the importance of some of those other pieces. Like, what else do you think you maybe learned from your childhood, or even when you were at college, just seeing what happened in your family that has helped like with your mission statement or values as a family?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that, it ties into what you just said of pay yourself first. I actually just wrote this in my journal a couple of days ago, is pay yourself first. But in parentheses, I put with time, because I think that's something that I had gotten off track on, was neglecting how I was investing my time and where I was giving time and attention away to others and kind of emotional energy too. And so that's been something that at different times in my life, like I've had to kind of hone back into to look back at and say, okay, you have a finite, you've got 24 hours in the day. Sleep's important to me. So let's call it 16 hours in a day to actually do anything. And then when you factor in just kind of those day-to-day obligations or the time that you want to invest in work, it really gets, you know, it really narrows down pretty quickly. So focusing the time that you do have on the things that are going to move the needle forward, whether it's in relationships, whether it's building a podcast or a business or whatever it might be, just getting super intentional. And I think that's an area that I recognized early on. And so to go to your question of like, what did I take from that experience? And it was to never get too comfortable and to make sure that I'm being super conscious of how I'm spending my time. And so I think that's why I had this entrepreneurial drive kind of ingrained in me, that I wanted to be financially free. But if I'm going to do that and still show up for my higher priority of family, I have to be so strategic of where I'm investing my time and how I'm spending my time. So if I'm working, I have to really be working, and I have to be going after those activities that are the top priority. And one of the books that I think illuminates this the best is the One Thing. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one, by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan. Mm-hmm. It's such an easy concept of just focus on the one thing that's going to move the needle for you the most, that makes everything, I think the way they phrase it is, the one thing that makes everything else either easier or unnecessary.
Yeah.
Or, I'm probably butchering
yeah,
that,
yeah. You basically take your to-do list for the day and then you look at it and say, all right, what one thing can I do will make the rest of this to-do list irrelevant? And like for me, the funniest part from that book was that's the one task that we usually avoid the most, is because it's the one that's the hardest or the most resistant or makes us most uncomfortable. Like a lot of times I'm like, all right, I've got this podcast, I'm trying to grow it. How do I go find more listeners? And it's like, record another episode. Like that's the one thing, if you, for a podcast, you want more, you just do more episodes. And that's the thing I'll avoid. It's like, well, maybe if I do two more tweets and one more Instagram post, someone will find me. Okay. That's not how it works, you know?
Right. Right. No, such a good point. And so, yeah, it's just like those little things like that of trying to hone in how I'm spending my time so that being disciplined with how I'm spending my time so that I have freedom. It's that's like kind of the Jocko Willink concept that seems counterintuitive of the more disciplined you are, the more free you actually are.
Yeah. It's counterintuitive, isn't it? It's like, oh, you're so rigid. You eat at this time. You take your walk at this time. You listen to podcasts at this time. You write at this time. Where do you ever have like any freedom? It's like, well, by doing that, I have 4 hours of unscripted time a day. Otherwise, my whole day is just completely unscripted and I actually get nothing done. You talked about a journaling habit, and I do want to find out what that looks like. But did you go, or do you regularly go and actually write down your days and like where you're spending your time, and so you can analyze how it's being spent?
Yeah, I'm pretty, I use my calendar. So just my digital calendar for that more than anything, of actually scheduling out the things that I know need to get done. So
it's like, what's your calendar look like today? Like, how does that look?
Dual approach. Yeah. So a lot of meetings and calls and things like that, but so for example, my full morning was booked with calls and meetings and conversations that kind of needed to happen. Over my lunch hour, I have my workout booked. And so throughout the week I go through and actually block off that time. And then part of my job is, you know, outreach, prospecting, things like that. I have time blocked for that, because that when you talk about the one thing, there's one that if I don't schedule it, it won't happen. It's probably that one thing that if I do it, makes everything else easier.
In the sales role, that's the hardest thing to do, but it's that's the one that actually moves the needle for sure.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then I kind of at the end of the day, pick up my daughter at 4:30 and have that time till she goes to bed, just kind of open. So that's that time that, you know, we'll make dinner, we'll do that stuff during it. But maybe if it's nice out, we'll go to the pool, or we'll walk around the block, or we'll go to the park. So that's kind of that freedom part of, all right, I want to structure my life in a way such that that window is open.
Yeah, you're not sitting there now at 4:30 going, okay, I need to find a way to still get a workout in today, and I still have to send a few work emails. And so that 4 hours is now 2.5 hours. That 2.5 hours, you're now sitting there thinking about those other tasks you have to do.
And then there's again a window in the evening. So once my daughter's asleep, where I'm doing one of three things. I'm either knocking out some tasks around the house that I know need to get done, mowing the lawn, whatever it is. I'm working on some high value kind of work items that I know are going to move the needle, or I'm spending quality time with my wife. And that's kind of structured just throughout the week, where at some point throughout the week, all of those things have to happen. And each week might look a little bit different, but my days are kind of structured so that I have that flex. And then I have that to-do list with that number one thing written out each day I know needs to get done. And so one way or another, I have that set up so that thing will get done.
And when you schedule your workouts, like you've got your workout over your lunch, do you actually put in there what you're going to do? Or is that sort of, you just have an hour carved out and you just do what you want to do that day?
I will set up my workouts before I go down. Either I know I'm going to do, like we have a Peloton, so I'll do a ride or kind of a scheduled workout on that. Or before I go down in the basement where I have some free weights, I will plan out what my workout is. So I've gone through different programs and things like that. I'm not currently in one, but I have a general understand what I'm going to do each day. But then before I actually start my workout, I'll plan it out of the actual time frames, the exercises, so that I'm doing it when I'm doing my workout. I don't have to think about it at all. It's all listed out. So once I actually start, usually I'll do like a 30-minute, either AMRAP or just kind of CrossFit style workout. And I'll know, all right, 30 minutes, I'm going hard in the paint. And here's the things I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm not stopping for a minute in between sets to say, all right, what do I want to do next?
Sounds like intentional is a theme that runs through a lot of your day on how you balance all of this. So even when you go down to the gym, you are intentional. You probably don't have your phone down there with you and you're not scrolling on social media between sets.
Yeah. The only thing the phone's used for is the timer on it.
So do you go back and actually revisit your calendar and then kind of review where you were spending your time and talk and journal about that?
Not too much, to be honest with you. It'd probably be a good exercise to go through, but you know, there are days or weeks where I think back on my week and I'm like, I just did not make the progress or have the momentum that I wanted to at the close of the week. And I'll reflect back on kind of why that was, or I was focusing my energy. Sometimes it was just a week where I didn't have that intentionality. I wasn't as good about scheduling the time. And then it quickly gets zapped away into meaningless activities where you are scrolling or you're spending time and kind of investing energy in areas that either could have been outsourced or could have been spent otherwise with a more productive.
So do you think you need weeks like that though to sort of like let the brain kind of just rest where not every minute is calculated out? Like,
I think it's for me kind of part of my human nature where there will be times where I get out of balance. And I think when I have those weeks, it's a good opportunity to look back and be like, okay, where can we fine-tune this and do I need to be scheduling more time for, you know, myself and for doing things that are going to give me a little bit more open head space. Mm-hmm. And it was this just a buildup of kind of unrecognized, you know, unspent energy towards like myself, putting towards myself or listening to podcasts or whatever it might be? Or am I just tired? Sometimes I'll find that, you know, I just didn't sleep great that week, or I was getting up early and that was impacting how productive I was during the day. I think it's a good opportunity to reflect on kind of why you felt like that at the end of the week.
Yeah.
And a lot of this too, it was funny when we had our daughter, that was like six straight months of everything, you know, just thrown completely out of whack, and every idea I had about how to structure my life and productivity and sleeping well and exercising got kind of thrown into the meat grinder, and had to revisit a lot of these concepts and reorganize how I was going to make these things happen. So I think just life in general has this, has a way of reminding you that there will be obstacles that you need to adjust to. And if you're glued to one way of doing it, you might have to see where the glue is weak and restructured.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the show, but I want to share this recent listener review from Penny. She says, quote, "I'm adding this one to my listen list for sure. I really dig the content so far and the interview style of the host. I can tell he has a real gift for digging deep into heartfelt issues." Thanks, Penny. If this is your review, please send me an email at podcast@kwandal.com with your t-shirt size so that I can send you a swag bag. How about you? Are you enjoying the show? If you are, please subscribe to the show and leave a review. I might just read your review live on the next episode. And if I do, you'll win a swag bag of your own. And just so you know, one of the best things you can do to support the show is to tell your friends about it and to leave a review or a star rating. This small act that takes about 20 seconds helps out a ton. Now, back to the show. I was listening to your podcast and you had Rob Wolf on, and he talked about how he was a busy guy. And I'll put a link to that episode and your podcast and sort of where to find you for the show notes for this episode over at kwandal.com/mulvey. And that's kwandal.com/mulvey, MULVEY. But in that episode, he was like, Yeah, I was a busy guy before having kids, but I didn't realize he was like how like much less, how much more you have to schedule when you have kids. And so like talk about like the being deliberate with your schedule now that you have a baby, and like, because I would hold you up as a success story of calendaring and having balance and still worrying about sleep and exercise and your work and your relationship with your wife and the food that you're eating and all of that. And like, we need to share more of the hows of people, how they're actually doing that. And I think we're doing that right now, but like, what else do you think of as far as like what, because this is kind of new. That's what's great, is this has only been like, how, what, 18 months or 19 months or?
Yeah, yep, yeah.
So you still remember, before when you, the schedule didn't really matter then, did it? Like you had probably, it felt like you had all the time in the world. But there's some folks listening to this who maybe have kids who are 10, 11, or 12 or older, and they basically the kids' schedules run the household. And that's important, but they you also need to take care of yourself and your spouse, your spousal relationship.
So frankly, it's been a work in progress, and a lot of families probably have it. I'm not even in the stage of multiple kids and kids in activities and sports as much. You know, we've got a few little classes we go to, and we're starting school up in a couple of months, but like, so I'm in that early phase of it. But it's honestly why I started the World Class Dads podcast, because you talk about guys like Rob who are at the absolute top tier of their field and still prioritize their families. And so that's why I started the show, is to learn from guys like that. I'm like, okay, there are men who are leading their crafts, number one in the world or in the top echelon of people doing whatever they're doing, and they're still intentional parents. I want to learn from them, because in those early days, a lot of it's sleep deprivation. I just looked at my 10-year vision, and I'm like, I have no time to do any of these things. And so how is this possible? But one thing I will say for new dads is that you survive those early days. They're about survival, and you do get through them. And then there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and you get more intentional or more purposeful about how you spend your time again. But I think there's a few things. One is what I've been talking about, but just looking at your calendar and understanding, all right, where do I want to build in that time? What are your priorities? And make sure that they're scheduled. And so if your priority is having just kind of open flex time with your family to spend quality time with your family, schedule it. And that sounds so lame to some people of, oh, you're going to schedule your free time. It's like, yeah, because then if I do that and then I fill in all of the necessary things around it, I know they're getting done. And it gives me that mental freedom, that mental clarity that I can be unplugged completely when I'm spending time with my family and my daughter, because I know that I have time to get those other things done. Because I've done it the other way where I don't do it, and then I'm with my daughter, but I'm so tempted to look at my phone, or I'm stressed of when am I going to get this thing done that I know is a huge priority, or I have this project for this client that I know is just kind of lingering in the back of my head. Instead of focusing on the present moment and that quality time with my family, I'm thinking my head somewhere else. So I just to not to harp on this, the scheduling thing too much, but just from a kind of mental perspective of how that works for me, that's why I do it, is it just opens my mindset to be able to really enjoy those moments. And then the other thing is just getting clarity on what your priorities are. So that's probably actually step number one. And that's where you can't get it all done. And that's why I did have to take a hiatus from the podcast for a kind of a temporary one for me. But
and I hope you'll start it up again, because I'm learning a lot. And so you're doing the dirty work for me.
Yeah, no, I absolutely will be. It'll be coming back here in the next month or two. It was just one of those things where I had to look at kind of what was moving the needle. And so starting this new business was something that was an opportunity to work with a mentor of mine on something that I truly believed in. And I recognized I couldn't do that and the podcast and all and manage all those other priorities at the same time. So for this one season, I could really put more energy into that, get it to a place where either we recognize, I mean, we're testing the concept right now. So either we'll get to a place where we know it's not the right path and we need to pivot, or that we're going to invest and kind of go all in on it. But in a, we have a kind of a strategic approach of finding the right people to help us do that. So ultimately it will open up my time, that block of time in my schedule to focus again on the podcast. But it's just really getting priority of or clarity on those priorities so that you can schedule your calendar around those meaningful items on the calendar and on the to-do list. But that's been the biggest thing for me in terms of being able to focus on the things that I still want to focus on and that are high priorities, is understanding what they are. Because, you know, when I go a couple months with the fitness piece falling behind, then I start feeling less energetic. I just don't feel like myself. I lose that mental clarity, and all of a sudden everything else starts operating at less than optimal levels. And so, you know, again, that's all trial and error there, but without having that priority and that realization, that understanding that aspect of myself, I couldn't appropriately allocate the time that it requires to be firing on all cylinders in that area. Yeah. So,
and you talked about powering down. And so, you know, 4:30 comes around and it's quality time with the family. What does it look like? I know you've mentioned before about kind of, you have this like tick of reaching for the phone to scroll and you're like, what am I doing? Like, this is the only chance that I'm going to have to do this. Like, I think a good word is like hedges or safeguards in your life to prevent those. They're like addictions, social media, right? And phones and things. How do you build those like boundaries or safeguards?
I'm just a human being like everybody else, so I'm not perfect with it, but you know, I've picked up different tricks and things along the way. And the biggest one for me is, if I don't want to be checking my phone or thinking of like just subconsciously end up scrolling or checking my email, I mean, that's, you know, a big one for me. Don't have it in the room. And so if there's something big that I'm expecting, say I'm expecting a client email or some update on a business frontier, then it's a conversation with my wife of like, hey, this is something that I actually do need to check at, you know, at this time at 5:30, can you just give me 10 minutes to go and check on this and see if there's something I need to knock out for it real quick, and giving myself that flexibility and that freedom to be able to do so. I think the number one is just don't have it with you, first of all, because then you won't face that temptation. And the other thing for me has just been mindfulness in general, like a mindfulness practice. And what I mean by that is just focusing on the present moment. And it's called a practice for a reason, because, you know, I do need to practice mindfulness and focusing on what I'm doing at this specific moment and being where my body's at. So it's always a work in progress. Yeah. But
do you have any like, tactics that you use to get kind of more present? Like for me, it's breath work, but I'm curious if there's anything you do like before you shut down the work part of your day, like the first part of the work part of the day, and like go like see your daughter. Like, is there something you do?
One thing I do is at the end of each day is take a look at my to-do list and revamp that for the next day, so that I know, all right, here's the things that maybe I was hoping to accomplish that I didn't. We'll make that top priority for tomorrow, or the things that maybe could get bumped to next week or something, and just really understanding, you know, what's left on the list and what I need to accomplish, and start looking at what I need to schedule out for the following day so that I can get right into it. But then also have that mental freedom that, okay, this didn't get accomplished, but I have a plan to make sure that it does, and all the loose ends are tied up. Because that's where I get stressed, is when there's an incomplete task that I don't have a plan for finishing. and you could ask my wife about it. Like, and this is not just work stuff. It's like, if I have a house project, like we were putting some shelves up in the garage, for example, just as like a silly example, but I was like halfway through it and told my wife I'd by, you know, 8:30, I would be done. I'd just stop wherever I was and then I'd finish it later. It drove me nuts. Like, she's like, yeah, it's like,
just
first
go
thing
out
the next
there,
day.
Yeah.
Yeah. First thing the next day, I'm just like down there and I'm like, I'm finishing it. Cause it just looms over my head. So if I don't have a plan and something's incomplete like that, then it just drives me nuts. So I need to, if I have to stop something midway through, or, and you know, a lot of projects are multi-year projects, multi-month projects, whatever it is, I just need to know, I need to set it up for myself so that I know what the next step is and when that's occurring, and plan my days, months, weeks, whatever it is, around that. Yeah. So that I have it and I'm not just not lingering in the back of my OCD mind.
I'm super impressed at how self-aware you are. I want to know about the journaling habit, because it just, you just keep going over and over again of like you catching yourself doing things and then you're like, oh, I don't like this. I better come up with a plan to change it and put it on my calendar.
Well, and sometimes I should say that it's catching myself after doing these things for months at a time.
Hey, months at a time. So, that's okay. It's better than never, right? I mean, you got to give yourself some credit.
But just for the listener's perspective, just because I can condense it in a 5-minute story doesn't mean it didn't take me 5 years to actually learn that lesson. So
that's true. But the like you said about the beginning of the of having a child, it's kind of like throwing your schedule and your plans into the meat grinder, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, through these stories, I'm realizing like it may be tough, but if you have a plan, you can find a way to create that balance again. And you keep talking about seasons too, and understanding that just because you're super busy at work right now, or you're super busy with family commitments that are draining, like sometimes that happens, it can be a season and there will be another point where you can rebalance and kind of reconfigure things. What is your journaling habit look like?
Yeah. So talk about seasons. This is a good one where like right now it's not perfect. So I'll go through stretches where every single morning I'll sit down and I actually like to do I know this is not the conventional advice you hear, but a lot of people like to handwrite their journals. I actually prefer to do mine on my computer just because my handwriting is terrible and I'm such a slow writer these days.
Do you ever go back and look at a note and you're like, what did I try to say here?
Yeah, like literally I get anxiety if I have to like write on a whiteboard in front of people.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah,
boy,
me too.
Because I also suck at spelling. So
I'm the same way. Like, I'm writing down notes as we're talking, like of trains of thoughts. And I'm like, I can't show this to anyone. Like, no way.
Those are the best, because I'll do that when I'm podcasting too, where I'll write a note and I won't even really be looking at it because I want to keep eye contact. And then I look down like 20 minutes later, I'm like, I don't even know what I wrote.
I think I could go walk into a Walgreens and they'd give me some kind of, they think this is a doctor's script or something based on how I'd saw scribble in here, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So when the journaling's going well, what does it look like?
Yeah, so I do everything in Evernote. Like I probably have 10,000 individual notes in Evernote because my journal's in there, my to-do list, my call notes, like anything, my podcast notes, anything you can think of, my vision, it's all in Evernote. And I like it because I have it on my phone, I have it on my computer. Like, it's always kind of at my fingertips when I need to just jot something down or check something. But so I actually will do my journaling in Evernote, especially because I'm in Cleveland, Ohio. You know, it's nice to sit outside in the morning. If I can create my mornings, which again, this was one of those challenges that I had to figure out with having kids of, especially a daughter who some days will be up at 6, some days will be up at 7:30, but having time, get outside for 10 minutes, be able just to sit quietly, meditate, and then have my coffee and journal, and just it looks differently each day. I don't answer a specific segment of questions. I do have some prompts that I'll go back to if I need a little help to get going. But a lot of times it's just a brain dump, just to Tim Ferriss calls it, you know, just tame the monkey mind. And it's just literally, okay, here's what's on my brain. And I want to get this out. Or sometimes it's like advice to myself that, because what one thing that I've found with myself is that if somebody else is experiencing something, I have no issue like giving them advice or coaching them and having clarity around what they should do in their life. But when it's me, it's like this, for whatever reason, this dark hole or this black hole of just vortex that I have no insights in how to accomplish this, get out of this situation. So a lot of times I'll just sit down and kind of try to step out of the situation and write down thoughts as if I somebody else through this. And I'll just, whether it's just like a little insight that I think of or a specific situation, I'll just kind of word vomit on the page and just see what comes out. Sometimes it's complete garbage and makes no sense and is terrible advice. Sometimes I'll write something down like the nugget that I shared earlier of pay yourself first in time. And so but it's a therapeutic exercise of just getting thoughts out of your head. And, you know, once I put it down on the screen in that note, then I can kind of either let it go if it's something that's more of a something I'm anxious about, or I might pull out an insight that I didn't really realize was there because I didn't take the time to think about it, and then I can apply it. So it varies a little different, but what I found is it's more about the time than it is the structure for me, because some mornings I'm just like, I don't know what I have nothing's coming to me to journal about. I'll start writing. It'll be, the weather is nice today. Look, there's a duck.
Yeah.
Stupid stuff.
Hey, you got to get those thoughts out and tame the subconscious and conscious mind, right?
Right. And so on those days, maybe going back to one of my prompts or something that I heard a lot of times, if I'm listening to a podcast, for example, and somebody shares something that they've journaled on, I'll just make a note and just kind of like a blank note with that as a prompt of maybe I'll revisit that one day.
Yeah. There's a book called The Artist's Way. It talks about morning pages, and it's a very similar concept. It can be handwritten. It can be on a computer. It doesn't really matter where it is, but it's just writing down any thought that comes to mind. It's like, oh, there's a cardinal. He's eating a worm. I wonder what I'm going to have for lunch today. And then you get all that out, and then your mind becomes submissive, and then it can be calm. And then I love the advice to yourself. That is so cool, because I'm the same way. Like, I'm sure many, many people are. Like, giving advice is easy. It's like, I can see exactly what you're doing wrong. Like, this, and this. Like, duh. Like, how ignorant are you? But it's like, in my own life, self-examination and looking at my own problems from within, it's so much more difficult to do.
It is. And it's like, I don't know if you've ever had a coach, but I've had, you know, different coaches throughout my life who performance coaches or even sport coaches. But like specifically, I had a performance coach who would ask me the most simple questions and just kind of, it wasn't about him. And this, I think, is what good coaches do well. It's not about them giving you the answer or the path. It's about them helping you just to realize what you already know. That experience helps me to realize, well, I can do this myself if I do it in a structured way. Now, I haven't implemented that perfectly, but I do it sometimes. So I'll take that for now. Maybe I'll get better about it eventually. And that could be a blog post or a book. But if you could just do that every once in a while, I think there's a lot of value to it.
Yeah. You know, there's a journal that I like by Ben Greenfield, and it's the Spiritual Disciplines Journal. And the original journal that we launched together in 2017 was just meant to be like a once a day journal. And then he created this new version that had sort of a morning portion and then an evening portion. And the evening portion was all about self-examination, because an unexamined life is not worth living, I think is a quote that's out there. But basically, at the end of the day, it's been super helpful for me. And like you, when I do it, I don't do it as often as I should. Maybe because it's like that Gary Keller one thing. It's what I'm avoiding because I know it actually works. But at the end of each day, it's like, what is like one way you lived your purpose today? And then like, what is one thing you did well? And like, what was one thing that you wish you would have done better? And it's like, oh man, I wish I would have done this better. Like you said earlier, that should become my to-do list item numero uno the next day. I avoid that. I don't want to know what that thing is. And even though I know it works, like self-examination is unbelievable. And that journal makes it really easy to, it gives you the prompts, it's set up. I have one on my nightstand and it's just so easy to do.
And it's just one of those things, I get into those, as you were saying that, what was going through my mind was I get into those phases where there's that thing that I know that if I just do it, it's going to make life better, or it's going to improve something, or it's going to give me less anxiety. And then the moment it just like, then once I'm not doing it, the longer I go without doing it, it makes it harder and harder. It's just the concept of momentum. Like if you have zero momentum, pushing that rock to start tumbling down the hill is the hardest part. But once you get going, then it makes it so much easier. But that first step is always the hardest.
When you go and record that first podcast episode after being on your summer break, there's going to be so much more like self-doubt and like, oh, like, who am I? Like, I shouldn't be interviewing this guy. Because like, I've found like the best way for me, like I have so much imposter syndrome with the show, like getting to talk to people like you and my guests that I'm like, these guys have it all together. Like, I'm literally just talking to them because I like how they're operating and I want to like take 1% of it for myself. And it's like the best way I can get through and not second guess myself is just to schedule as many interviews in a row as possible. So it's like, I'm so busy. I don't have time to question myself.
That's the same with me. And the other thing that helps me get over that hurdle is because I before I had World Class Dads, I had a show called Millennial Mastermind, and the entire framing of the show, and I've carried this over into World Class Dads, is, oh, I'm just an idiot who doesn't know, it knows a fraction of what my guests do. So I'm just a student on this. This is just my kind of personal way to get these guys to give me an hour of their time to coach me. And so I'm just coming into this as like a total fool who knows nothing and can just ask questions of somebody who's way smarter.
If I would use the term a life hack, like you start a podcast and you read books that you're reading anyway, and then you can go and talk to that author and be like, why did you write this? Or like, how did you implement that? It's the coolest thing. We were kind of talking about, I really like Stephen Pressfield's book, The Resistance That Stops Us From Doing like what we know we should do. For me, it can be exercise. I'll avoid that. It can be writing, or it could be my podcast. Like, what are the things you've put away when that you know you should be doing?
I used to get up by 5 a.m. and would have a very kind of regimented morning routine. And a part of that, you know, was journaling, meditating. I used to do more kind of exercise stuff in the morning. And I struggle with that. This is actually something I kind of am currently working through, is striking the right balance of what that time for me to wake up is, because I've recognized that with the right amount of sleep, I'm more productive and everything else seems to work better. But I also love that time in the morning to knock those things out and be able to do them. And so I kind of was forced to step away from that with a young baby, but now I'm getting back into a stage of life where I can certainly wake up earlier and have a more structured morning routine that is more consistent day to day. But I am working through my own mind. As I talk through this now, I don't know if it's kind of an excuse I tell myself that I need that extra 30 minutes of sleep, hour of sleep, or if it's just kind of something that I've leaned on now for longer than I need to of not replacing that morning. But
yeah, like give the advice to yourself as if you're in your journal. What do you think the answer is?
I don't have a very consistent wake up time at this stage. Some days it's 5:30. Some days it's 6:30. You know, it changes just kind of based on what I have going on. And I think I need to get back into that of, all right, no matter what, here's the time that I wake up, and I structure my my evenings, everything around it to make sure I'm getting the sleep I need to get and that I'm accomplishing. And I can get back to that kind of structured morning routine where I am journaling every day, where I am meditating every morning, where I'm doing those things that I know I enjoy doing and that they have a positive impact for me.
Do you wake up with an alarm right now or do you wake up naturally?
I wake up with an alarm. I'm one of those people who can sleep as long as I let myself go to the point where I'll sleep 10 hours and feel exhausted because I feel like I slept too much. I don't know what that is about.
But. Yeah, well, there's the whole sleep momentum, I don't think is the word, or sleep friction. Basically, you sleep so long that you just want to keep sleeping. And I know just hormonally, it's easier to wake up before 6. You'll feel more alert and awake if you wake up before 6. And every hour after that, like, you're going to be more lethargic. Like, you're hormonally, you want to wake up closer to that sunrise time and get that morning red light. But I do know, like, you know, like me, I operate best with 9 hours of sleep, and I don't have kids yet, and it might change. And that's kind of my sweet spot is 9 hours. And I do know, though, that if I have to shorten my sleep time, that like a siesta in the afternoon, like a 20 to 30 or 40 minute siesta in the afternoon, if that's possible, it can possibly replace like one and a half hour sleep cycle at night.
Yeah, I've gone through that too, because there's the I don't know the guy's name, but there's these great YouTube videos on YouTube, but I just use it for the audio. It's like binaural beat power naps. Mm-hmm. And I go through when I'm in, like, especially when we had an infant who was waking up multiple times throughout the night and it was just chaos. I was using that, but I've gone through phases of life where I was always, like, almost daily taking a kind of a power nap and getting fewer hours at night.
Any naps now in your schedule?
Not typically. No, maybe that's something to revisit though. There's a great book. I don't know if you've ever heard of Aubrey Marcus, mm-hmm. but the book is called Own the Day. And mm-hmm. he talks about that, of the actual, like, the science behind that, of getting those kind of power naps. I think he recommends a 30 minute power nap can be replace a sleep cycle, just like what you said.
Yeah. And you can use apps like the, and I'll link to them in the show notes for this episode, but there's like the New Calm, there's the Binaural Beats, there's Sleepstream, there's all these different apps that you can use to, like, get your brain into the sleep waves. Cause I think that's the hardest part. Like, you're in heavy work mode and then somehow now you're going to go and crash and nap. Like, I know,
right.
Like, you can use reishi mushrooms from Four Sigmatic, and you can use lavender oils. You can get the room really dark. I know some people say, like, sleeping in your daytime clothes is, like, Winston Churchill, I think, would, like, go and completely change into his pajamas in the afternoon and, like, go to sleep, you know, keep the room dark, use the noise-canceling headphones, like, all these tricks to get naps in. But it's another one of those things, you have to schedule it, and...
Yeah.
It's best if you do them at the exact same time every day, so you're training your body that at 2 o'clock, I'm going to get this nap, and then it knows not to worry about the tiredness. Like, that's going to abate at the 2 o'clock nap. So,
yeah, I used to do that. It's funny thinking back on it, where I'd get up pretty early, get a morning workout in. And this was at the stage of my life where I was driving an hour each way to work. And so I was probably getting up at like 4:30, and then I would drive to, you know, get all that stuff done, get to work. And then over kind of the lunch hour, I'd go take a power nap in my car in the parking lot. And so it got me through that season. So, and it worked well. So maybe there's something I need to revisit, because it has worked for me in the past.
So now that you're not doing the hour commute, when do you listen to your podcast? Like, that was kind of your time.
A lot of times it's like the mindless tasks. Like, I mow the yard, I mow the lawn, a lot of things. I get fulfillment out of some of these like household tasks that, you know, could be outsourced. And I know you read books like Millionaire Mindset or things, and it's like, outsource anything that you could pay less than what your hour is worth to do it, or whatever your time is worth. Yeah,
there was this book by Steve Glavisky, Time Rich, and it was one of the best productivity books I've ever read. And he was like, yeah, he's like, write down everything you do and then assign a dollar amount and what it would take to hire someone else to do it. And he's like, you basically do the $1,000 an hour tasks and $10 an hour tasks. Like, don't even consider it.
Yeah.
But like, I like washing the dishes because like, I right. don't have to think. It's like,
right. And so it's those things. Like the best thing I ever got was Apple AirPods. Cause I pop them in so quick and it's like, okay, I have a 10-minute activity like that, or folding the laundry or something. That like, if folding the laundry is a good one, where I just, it's an activity that I don't enjoy at all and I've historically dreaded. But now it's like, okay, that's 10 minutes just to kind of like do something mindless, but listen to a part of a podcast or an audiobook that I'm listening to.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm, you know, got a Saturday of yard work that maybe it's not the most enjoyable activity, but those are actually things like that stuff where I'm working with my hands. I do actually enjoy the activity of, like, especially if it's got some physical exertion aspect to it, but I can also layer in listening to a podcast or a book. I feel revamped after that stuff. So
yeah, you know, I was curious, you mentioned all these different books while we've been talking, you know, Aubrey Marcus and Gary Keller and Stephen Pressfield, and there's a bunch more, and I'll link to all these books in the show notes over at kwandahl.com/mulvey. That's kwandahl.com/mulvey. But like, are you listening to the audios of these books or are you reading the books? Because you said you only have 24 hours in the day, but I think the listener and myself are going to question you. I think you have more like 30.
No, I'm an audiobook guy for sure. Like I do enjoy reading, but it's never one of those part of the morning routine where when I would just have like 10 minutes to read an actual physical book, that's something I do enjoy. But I love the audiobooks just to be able to kind of multitask and listen to something while, whether it's, sometimes I'll listen while I'm working out too. And so I do a lot of renting audiobooks from the library even, and that way I can listen to 20 minutes of it or an hour of it and then step away from it. Cause that used to be a vice of mine, is like, if I started listening to it's like that incomplete task thing I talked about earlier. If I started listening to a book, even if I thought it was complete trash, I just, like, there was some mental tick that I had to listen to the whole thing.
That's so hard to break. Like even with physical books, like you crack that thing open and you put 50 pages into it and you're like, I'm not learning anything here, or this person's a really bad writer and it just really bothers me. Like, but I'm in 50 pages. I got to finish the book.
So that is something I had to overcome. But starting with renting books for me has been a good kind of hack for that. I don't feel as committed to as if I would have actually paid money for it.
That's a great thought there for sure. And then I'm just curious more about your relationship with your wife and quality time and how you structure making sure that you guys are both fulfilled with quality time and are still nourishing your relationship during now that you have a kid.
Yeah. So a lot of it's been, it's funny because we have very different personality types when it comes to, like, for me, I like to make a goal of, all right, this year we're going to take at least 2 overnight weekend trips with each other. And we're going to do a date once a month. And like, I like trackable things like that, where she's like, no, that's stressing me out. Let's just like, we'll organically do it. And we find some kind of happy medium where I'm thinking about it a little more proactively. And she's probably more actually proactive at like scheduling these things and getting them on the calendar, but not with like a goal. Just like, she just wants to have fun and like make sure that
she doesn't need the goal. She's going to do it anyway.
Yeah. She's just, that's actually accurate. She is just naturally good at a lot of the things that it takes me a lot of structure to accomplish. But we're both very mindful and intentional around having time for each other in our relationship. And this was even before we had kids that we talked about this type of stuff, where we wanted to make sure that our relationship was always, you know, the top priority. And then that baby comes that you love so much. And it's like, okay, we're the top priority, but that kid's like priority number 2 by like a quarter of an inch down the pole.
I think people get that wrong. And I don't have kids. I've just read a lot of books on this subject, and it talks about that that parental relationship being strong is the best thing you can do for your kids, because you're giving
totally
them the model of how their relationships will be.
Yep. Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And we are aligned in that. And I think that if you don't have those conversations with your spouse and you're not aligned in that, that's where things can get a little out of whack. But, you know, fortunately, like at the stage we're at, our daughter's out for the night at the latest by 8 o'clock, but usually like 7:30-ish. And so I mentioned some nights I'll be knocking out some work, or I'll have something I need to do around the house or whatever it is. But a lot of nights, like, we'll sit together and have a glass of wine, and we'll turn, even though we might, especially last year with the pandemic and everything, and we've spent so much time at home, we weren't getting out of the house on dates, but we were doing a lot of kind of at home dates, where even if it wasn't something like formal or fancy, like just us, we've got a little area in our backyard to sit, and we'd sit out there and split a bottle of wine or order some sushi delivery and sit down and just eat and talk. And some nights we just sit in bed or on the couch and watch a TV show. And yeah, maybe it's not, you know, those deep conversations, but we're together, we're spending time together. I think just having it, those nights and that time where we're spending together, is a high priority for both of us. And then also now getting out and having trips together. We took a ski trip in February, where we had three nights, just the two of us. And, we try to do those things as well. And yeah, I think in the future we'll do more of that. But, when you can't, I think it's just doing the best that you can and being intentional about making sure that you are spending that quality time and that you're getting that. And I'm blessed to have a wife who, you know, going deep and having deep emotional conversations is her forte, and she's opened me up in a lot of ways there. And so she'll ask those kind of tough questions, and we'll get into it. And so I think that helps too, being able to either be intentional about starting those conversations or just having them with your significant other.
Is there some type of like signal or alert where you realize you need that quality time? Like for me, I'll just say to my wife, like, hey, my love meter is getting low or something. And that's like a signal, like, hey, we need a night with no phones, no TV, like quality time, like playing games or taking a walk. Like, do you guys have some type of a way you communicate when you're really like needing more quality time?
I don't know that there's a formal way. We've been, so my wife will tell me when I'm not fulfilling her needs or when I'm being an idiot or not spending enough time. She's not one to shield me from her truest opinions, which has been very helpful in our relationships and has led me to being more open to my needs too, of being able to communicate like, hey, I'm feeling kind of like we're out of whack here. Not to say we're perfect things will get out of whack from time to time over an extended period of time, but we have a good way of either of us coming to the air and saying, hey, I think we need, like, we've been at each other's throats all week. Like, what's going on here? Like, I think we need a night for my parents to watch Stella and for us to go out and just hang out. I think we both take ownership of that when we catch it. So it's, you know, not a specific process or system, but I think it's just, we've developed a kind of in our relationship, an expectation of open communication. Or if we recognize that that each other are feeling off, you know, acting in a way that isn't in line with how we typically do or how we'd want to be treated, we're both just quick to air it out.
Yeah.
We lean towards over communication, if nothing else. But I think open communication in general has been key to our success, because, you know, we've gone through those phases where stuff gets bottled up and pushed down and then comes out in a fiery explosion. And so we try to avoid that because we've seen it. But yeah, for us, it's just creating a atmosphere of open communication in our relationship.
And like, this is your chance to give advice. So I'm assuming, I mean, you've done the Gary Chapman five love language quizzes.
Yeah.
And so if someone's listening to this and they're like, wow, I need to foster that level of communication and awareness of that connection with my spouse, like, what would you start with? Would you start with that book, or what would you do?
I think that book, we read that going in before we got married. And I think it's illuminating just for yourself, but also to recognize that we all don't put the same amount of value on different things. So for those who haven't heard it, it's just this concept that each of us has a different love language. And there's five that he mentions in the book. It's physical touch, words of affirmation, quality time, gifts, and something else.
Acts of service.
And just recognizing that because you get fulfillment from one of those isn't necessarily what your partner gets fulfillment from. And sometimes it's not your natural inclination to put energy into that other area that to you it's 0% important, but to them that's everything is important. So like acts of service is a really high one for my wife and wasn't necessarily for me,
which is why fold the laundry.
Right, exactly. So that really helps. And then I think also it's easy for us to, if you're in a spot in your relationship where you don't have that open communication, the easy thing to do is to continue it. And sometimes it just takes the kind of the bigger step of saying, all right, I'm going to lead by example and I'm going to share, I'm going to be vulnerable with my stuff. Not with the expectation that that's going to make things better, but if you treat your spouse or anybody, this is honestly true for any relationship, but if you put the energy into it that you would want to be returned, but without the expectation of it, just saying, I'm going to invest 100% into this day over day. And I might do that for a year and I have no expectation of being returned. Odds are though, it ultimately will balance out and your spouse will cue in on that and start to cue in on that. It sounded like QAnon, but
wait, we don't mention that on this show.
We're going in a whole different direction, but no, ultimately if you're giving 100% of yourself into a relationship and you're acting in the way that in your mind, the perfect version of your relationship would play out, I think that, that it will be returned and you just have to take ownership of that. Because I've been there where, you know, I have expectations, but I'm not necessarily communicating those expectations. And I'm not fulfilling what those expectations would be if I was on the other side of the table. So it's just saying, all right, I'm going 100% all in. You don't have to. I just want to do this for our relationship. And not actually saying that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend that. But doing it, leading with action, and then seeing where that takes your relationship. Because I think if you pour 100% of love, commitment, communication, those things in, ultimately it'll come back and it's just going to build a better relationship in the long term.
And being a parent and doing that, it's the best example that we can give to our future generations of how love is. And it's a sacrifice and there's not always reciprocation, but it usually will be reciprocated, love with love. So yeah. I think that's a great place to stop, because I don't know if we could pull a better nugget out of this conversation than what you just gave to us of how to have sacrificial love with your spouse and use the love languages to do that and unique to your own spouse and your own needs. So Brad, this was so much fun. I've got another 2 pages worth of material for the next time when we talk, because there's a lot more I want to dig in with. But I really appreciate you coming on the show. And for the listeners, like, where can we learn more about your show and more about you and more about your projects and what you're working on?
Well, yeah, first of all, just thank you, James. Like, I love what you're doing with the show. I've been tuning in. You've got a great voice for it, and you lead with curiosity. And I think that's the hallmark of all of the shows, the best podcasts, but the ones I listen to for sure. So I appreciate you and what you're doing here. You're doing a huge service. If anybody wants to check it out, if there's any dads listening, World Class Dads Podcast, you can find it on any of the podcast apps or anywhere where you listen to podcasts.
And moms too, really. I think anyone can get benefit from it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Anybody who is interested in it, and we've had, it's not about me. We've had some exceptional guests. So I encourage people just to check it out, see if there's anybody they want to tune into. WorldClassDads.com. You can find all the episodes there as well. I'm at Brad Mulvey on Instagram, and I haven't tweeted in quite a while, but yeah, I'd say Instagram's where I'm the most active. You can find me there on the socials. So I would love to, if anybody wants to reach out, hit me up. I'd love to have a conversation.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show.
Awesome. Thank you, James.